Stay tuned for Africa News Tonight, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Bob Doty reporting. A Saudi-led coalition launched new airstrikes in Yemen on Wednesday, hours after announcing a halt to a month-long bombing campaign. The air raids hit Houthi rebel positions in the central city of Taiz and in the southern port of Aden, as ground fighting between rebels and supporters of exiled President Abd Rabbu Mansur Hadi continued in both areas. In Taiz, the rebels seized control of a military brigade headquarters from forces backing Mr. Hadi before an airstrike hit the area. On Tuesday, Saudi Arabia declared an end to its bombing campaign aimed at halting the advance of the Houthis, but said its new focus on supporting a political solution could also include actions to prevent the rebels from acquiring or using weapons from Yemen's military. Italian Prime Minister Matteo Renzi says the European Union must help shoulder the burden of curbing migrant trafficking in African countries after as many as 900 people drowned Sunday when a ship capsized in the Mediterranean Sea.
È il voto. È un problema di dignità dell'uomo. E quando si parla di dignità dell'uomo, bisogna avere il coraggio di dire.
He said, this is an issue of human dignity, and when we talk about human dignity, we need to be brave enough to say that the Italian priority in this moment is to have Europe back in a political role with a capital P. I consider the calling of the extraordinary EU Council on Migrants a positive thing, but obviously it is not enough. Mr. Renzi made the comment Wednesday in remarks to Italian lawmakers in Rome, a day before European leaders had to hold an emergency meeting in Brussels to discuss the crisis. Members of Parliament also held a moment of silence to honor those who died in the accident. This is VOA News. French officials say they have arrested an Islamic extremist who was heavily armed and suspected of planning attacks on one or more churches. Police said Wednesday that they have taken a 24-year-old computer science student into custody in Paris after he called emergency services to request treatment for a gunshot wound. An Interior Ministry official said the man was an Algerian national who had stockpiled weapons and bulletproof vests in his apartment, along with documents indicating he was planning attacks on at least one church. They found that he was a radical Islamist, but had no evidence that he was connected to a particular terrorist group. The European Union charged Russian energy giant Gazprom with antitrust violations Wednesday, in a move that could further aggravate tensions between Russia and the EU. EU Competition Commissioner Margrethe Vestager announced the formal charges a week after mounting a similar challenge to U.S.-based internet search engine Google. She said Gazprom abuses its dominant position in Central and Eastern European countries, where it almost fully controls the gas market. Vestager said all companies that operate in the European market must play by the EU rules. The leaders of Japan and China met privately Wednesday at the Asia Conference in Jakarta, but it is not clear if they moved any closer to resolving their difference over Japan's past wartime aggression. VOA's Brian Patton reports.
Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe and Chinese President Xi Jinping met for about half an hour on the sidelines of a leaders' summit in Indonesia. The meeting could be a sign that the two sides may be willing to begin a dialogue to resolve their differences over China's concerns that Japan is trying to rewrite history and exonerate itself from World War II atrocities. Afterwards, Mr. Abe told reporters they agreed to work for better relations. Next week, Mr. Abe will travel to the United States and address a joint session of Congress. His speech will be closely watched to see if and how he addresses the sensitive issue of Japan's wartime past. Brian Patton, VOA News, Jakarta.
Afghanistan's Taliban says it will launch its spring offensive on Friday, again demanding immediate withdrawal of remaining foreign forces from the country. The operations will target foreign occupiers, their permanent military bases, their intelligence and diplomatic centers, the insurgent group announced in a statement emailed to VOA. The Taliban said the Afghan Intelligence, Interior Ministry, and the Defense Ministry will also be targeted at that time. I'm Bob Doty in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
Tens of thousands of Ethiopians gathered Wednesday morning to mourn the 30 Ethiopians killed by Islamic State militants in Libya last weekend. The gathering ended with demonstrators throwing stones at the police and the crowd being dispersed.
That's Marta Vanderwerf reporting from Addis Ababa. We'll have full details coming up. Also, more than 60,000 people have fled their homes amid fighting in the eastern DRC province of North Kivu in the past month. A rights group says anti-Balaka fighters in Central African Republic are holding more than 40 Muslim pole herders hostage. And political tensions are heating up in Guinea again, this time over the government's decision to postpone local elections until 2016. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story this hour, tens of thousands of Ethiopians gathered this morning to mourn the 30 Ethiopians killed by Islamic State militants in Libya last weekend. The gathering ended with demonstrators throwing stones at the police and the crowd being dispersed. Marta Vanderwerf reports from Addis Ababa.
A demonstration in Addis Ababa to denounce Islamic State and mourn the group's killing of Ethiopians in Libya marked the start of a three-day mourning period in the East African country. Prime Minister Haile Mariam Desalegn was among the officials and religious leaders who addressed the gathering. Tens of thousands of people gathered in the capital's main square and vowing to avenge the slaughter of their countrymen. Family members and friends of the victims were given special attention during the event. Ahazaika Sahai is the mother of one of the victims. She said she found out her child was killed when someone else told her they had seen her son on television. Ahaza's 38-year-old son left 2 months ago, saying he had found a job as a driver overseas. But the atmosphere changed when parts of the crowd began chanting messages directed at the government. People shouted things such as, "It's only here there is no government," voicing the dissatisfaction of many towards the government response not only to the Libya killings, but also to the lack of action to help Ethiopians caught up in the xenophobic attacks in South Africa. Authorities then dispersed the crowds, with police sometimes using sticks and firing a few rounds of tear gas to clear out the main square. Dozens were taken into custody, and some wounded demonstrators and police were taken to the hospital. Less than 2 hours later, everything was back to normal. A 31-year-old PhD student who wished not to be named had tears in his eyes looking at the scene Wednesday. He says he understands people's frustration because the Ethiopian government doesn't allow its citizens to express their feelings.
The first thing that the government should have to ask is that why people are migrating, why people are exiting from their country. There are a lot of challenges here. And just I want to ask the government to search what is the problem of the society to get out of their countries.
The beheading and shooting in the head of 30 Ethiopians in Libya, believed to be migrants trying to cross over to Europe, could be seen in a 29-minute video released by Islamic State on Saturday. Ethiopia has a long history of Muslims and Christians living peacefully side by side. Muslims make up about 40% of the population, according to government statistics, with followers of the Ethiopian Orthodox Church being the majority. Marta van der Wolf for VOA News, Addis Ababa.
The European Union is set to meet an emergency session tomorrow, to consider 10 ways to stem the flow to Europe of migrants from many African countries and from war-torn Syria. The summit was called by Italy, which has provided most of the rescues on the Mediterranean so far. Amnesty International has called today for the EU to take emergency action. The human rights group says about 21,000 migrants have made the illegal and hazardous crossing so far this year. An estimated 1,500 died on the voyage. Ahead of the Brussels meeting, Italian Defense Minister Roberto Pinotta has argued for aggression action to destroy vessels used by the smugglers. Panotti says it's known where the smugglers keep their boats. The military action would be similar to the EU's anti-piracy project introduced off the Somali coast 7 years ago. Other proposals drafted by an EU executive committee include a larger budget for the EU's modest Triton Sea Rescue Program, assigning EU asylum officers to Italy and Greece to speed up fingerprinting and asylum applications, establishing a rapid return program for migrants who are refused residency, and sending EU immigration officers to Turkey and to Libya's neighbors, Niger, Tunisia, Morocco, and Egypt, to stem the migration flow. Meanwhile, a spokesman for the troubled Libyan government in Tobruk called for European aid in stopping the smugglers. Spokesman Hatem Al Aribi said the smuggling operations bring in large profits for opposition militants and terrorists within Libya. And aid agencies say more than 60,000 people have fled their homes amid renewed fighting in the eastern DRC province of North Kivu in the past month. But the number of displaced people in the province is falling, and the government plans to close down several of their resettlement camps around the provincial capital, Goma. Nick Long reports from one of those camps.
Like thousands of other people, 62-year-old Justin Masoudi and his family have been living in a tent at the Mugunga 3 camp outside Goma since 2008. Me and my family, we don't yet have a place to go back to, he tells VOA. My fields in Walikale, where I came from, have been occupied, he says. There are enemies there, and if I go back there, I shall be killed. So I'm staying here with the UN Refugee Agency, UNHCR. But, Masoudi says, nearly 60% of people in the camp now want to go home, and others, including himself, would be willing to go elsewhere, to another town besides Goma, for example. When it closed down camps in the past, the government offered residents only two options, either to return home or integrate in the community around the camp. But in recent months, a third option is increasingly talked about, going somewhere else that is not where the displaced person came from. This is known as reinstallation or regrouping, and it's been endorsed by DRC President Joseph Kabila, who has said it should help to modernise living conditions for people in rural areas. It's an option that the UN Refugee Agency supports. The agency has been asking the 17,000 displaced people around Goma where they want to go when the camps close.
Environ 50% des déplacés veulent s'installer ailleurs.
50%, says Patrice Ahuansu, a field officer for UNHCR, want to be reinstalled elsewhere, including only 2% who want to be reinstalled in Goma, and 46% want to go home. Ahuansu showed VOA a map indicating where displaced people want to be resettled. A large majority preferred towns close to Goma. VOA informally polled about a dozen people at Mugunga 3 camp. About half said they could go home, and most of the others said they could reinstall if certain conditions were met. If I can just have a bit of help, I could reinstall, says this man, Andre Hangi. And asked what type of assistance he was looking for, he says help to build a little house. Justin Masoudi says he has signed up to be reinstalled, but he'll need transport and some rations for a while, and he has no house where he's going. But he says if the refugee agency gives him a kit, including a tent, he can manage to build his own house. He warns, however, that in the past, some displaced people who left the camps did not receive those kits. For others, reinstallation will be more difficult. This man is saying he can reinstall if his father agrees. His father is in poor health, he says, and cannot walk up the hills in this mountainous area. The authorities will have the last word on where people can go, says official Chantal Kambibi. It's for the government to decide, she says, where there is sufficient infrastructure, schools, health centres and so on, for people to be reinstalled. Aid workers warn that proper planning and funding for reinstallation or returns to the villages still needs to be guaranteed, especially for the many elderly and vulnerable people currently living in camps. Nick Long for VOA News, Goma.
Coming up on 15 minutes past the hour, this is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. Well, the rights group says anti-Balaka fighters in Central African Republic are holding more than 40 Muslim bull herders hostage. Human Rights Watch says most of the captives are women and girls who are at risk of sexual violence. The group is calling on the government and UN peacekeepers to free them and warns there are reports that many others are being held. The crisis in CAR began in early 2013 when Seleka rebels toppled the government. Anti-Balaka militias first arose to counter attacks on Christians by the Seleka. The militia soon targeted Muslim civilians, including the PUL. Louis Mudge is Africa researcher for Human Rights Watch from the Rwandan capital, Kigali. He spoke to VOA's Joe DiCapua.
The PUL are an ethnic group of migratory herders who travel in the Central African Republic. They travel all the way to Senegal in West Africa and down to the Oriental province in the Congo. They move with their cattle, and they are predominantly Muslim. They're broken up into many different groups to many different countries, but the PUL we're talking about now are PUL known as Imbororo, and these are PUL from the Central African Republic.
So who exactly is being held, and where are they being held?
As you may remember, in late 2013, militias known as the Anti-Balaka started to rise up against the Seleka rebellion, and they turned their vengeance on Muslim civilians. Now, they started to attack the PUL in large numbers in late 2013 and early 2014, and we documented those attacks. What we've just been able to confirm is what we started hearing last year in late 2014, that many PUL were actually held hostage by these anti-Balaka fighters. Now, we've only documented this in the southwest of the country, so that's north of the capital, Bangui, in the southwest quadrant. But we are very concerned that this might be happening throughout the country in other areas.
Now, you have eyewitness testimony about what has happened to some of the other PUL members who were captured by the anti-Balaka forces. Is that right?
Yeah, last week I was in a Muslim enclave called Yaloke, where we spoke with a large group of PUL who had been released after 14 months of captivity. And what they had to say was truly shocking. Children, male children, were killed, some as young as 6 years old, by anti-Balaka fighters because they wanted to kill all the men. And women, some of the women were kept as sex slaves, which means they were raped routinely throughout their 14 months captivity. We spoke with one woman who was actually pregnant at the time. She had been raped by so many men that she didn't even know who the father was.
Now, Human Rights Watch is calling on the interim government and the UN peacekeepers to try to free them. How can they go about doing this?
We first documented this group of PUL. They came out of a village called Pondo, and we first documented this in December of last year. There are PUL who are getting out of these areas who are able to pass on information about other PUL who are still being held hostage. Now, we spoke with PUL out of villages called Mbaina, out of villages known as Gaga, and Betefio, and they told us about numerous groups of PUL. We've passed this information on to the UN, and the UN and the interim government have the capacity to approach these anti-Balaka and to urge them and oblige them to free these PUL that are being held hostage. It's really up to them to take this action, but the information is certainly available. You can find out where these people are held. It's a lot of hard work, but based on what we've recorded in terms of the conditions in which they were held, this is very urgent.
Now, at least a year or so ago, there were reports of, you know, ongoing violence in CAR. Some of those reports said that the PUL had supported the Seleka rebels in the attacks. Any truth to that?
Yes, there is, and it makes things very complicated. The fact of the matter is that the PUL, which are both the Imbororo from the Central African Republic and also a group of PUL known as the Imbarara from Chad, PUL men are oftentimes, especially in the eastern part of the country, aligned with the Seleka and are involved in attacks on civilians. We have documented this phenomenon, and it continues. I just spent 10 days in the east getting back last week, and this phenomenon certainly continues with Pol attacking civilians. So this is not to excuse the action of all Pol. What we're concerned with is children being killed, women being held as sex slaves. These are, by any stretch, civilians, and these people are being held hostage by anti-Balaka fighters and seriously mistreated.
Louis Mudge is Africa researcher for Human Rights Watch. From the Rwandan capital, Kigali, he spoke to VOA's Joe DiCapua. Past the hour, this is Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. Well, political tensions are heating up in Guinea again, this time over the government's decision to postpone local elections until 2016. The opposition says it will keep protesting despite renewed calls for dialogue. Karim Kamara reports from Conakry that Guineans say they are tired of all the discord.
Protesters clashed with security forces Monday during what authorities said was an unauthorized demonstration in Conakry. At least three people were wounded and an unknown number were arrested. Hundreds arrested during a demonstration last week have been sentenced to 2 to 5 month imprisonment. One person was killed. The opposition said security forces fired live bullets, which the government denies. It is just the last episode in what has been a years-long standoff between the government and the opposition over election organization. Dozens have been killed and wounded in protests since 2012. Previous disputes have centered on the composition of the Electoral Commission and the company contracted to handle the technical side of voters' registration and vote counting. Guineans, even those who support the opposition, say they are losing patience.
Aujourd'hui, de la situation guinéenne, ce que moi je pense, moi je fais un appel à l'opposition.
Teacher Maria Masako says the current situation is unfortunate. She says the opposition does not seem to want dialogue. They do not trust the government, she says, but this is not a solution, and they are just being stubborn. The opposition rejected government delegation Monday.
Mon avis, celui-là ne devrait pas refouler ces gens-là. La solution pour lui, c'est de venir sur la table.
Conakry Dr. Mamoudou Kamara says politics cannot cope with violence. That is what they could understand. Political extremism is not good, he says. Opposition leader says they will not negotiate until the government withdraws the current electoral timetable. That timetable sets the presidential polls for October and postponed local elections to 2016. Union of Republican Forces party leader Sidya Touré told VOA he believes the government wants to rig the presidential election.
Nous souhaitons avoir un dialogue qui aboutisse à quelque chose avec le gouvernement.
He says this is like a war. They cannot call for ceasefire before going to the negotiating table. He says we cannot negotiate until the Electoral Commission has stopped its current preparations. The international community has previously mediated deals between the two sides. Touré says the government has not kept its promises. The Electoral Commission says because of the Ebola outbreak, it cannot afford to hold two elections in 2015. But the opposition argues that the municipal elections are being overdue. The last ones were held in 2005.
Nous n'avons pas cessé d'appeler l'opposition à la table de négociation. Nous continuons à le faire. Un certain nombre d'initiatives sont...
Government spokesperson Albert Damantan Kamara says the government goal is peaceful elections and it will not stop calling for dialogue. He says when you are sincere, you can come to the table without preconditions. The government says it does not control the Independent Electoral Commission or the electoral timetable. But university professor and political analyst Sori Jakite says the government and the opposition need to talk.
Le point de divergence entre eux, je crois, c'est par rapport à l'ordre des élections.
Et moi, he says it is better to go straight to the presidential elections because if the president's elected mandate expires this year, Guinea will have an illegal president and that will provoke more problems and could be dangerous for the country. Human rights organizations are calling for negotiations, as are vendors and businessmen. The opposition has called for more protests Thursday, this time nationwide. Karim Kamara for VOA News, Conakry.
Well, a diverse cross-section of leaders from countries including China, Iran, and Zimbabwe gathered at the Asia-Africa Conference in Jakarta today. China's leader outlined his nation's ambitious strategy to boost economies across Asia and Africa by building infrastructure and striking trade agreements. VOA's Brian Patton reports from Jakarta.
In the past month, China has outlined its plans for a new Silk Road that will invest billions of dollars in infrastructure projects such as roads, ports, train links, and pipelines across much of Asia, the Middle East, and onto Europe. The so-called One Belt, One Road plan also includes the development of a maritime trade route linking ports in China with those in Africa and the Middle East. The plan would boost China's already significant economic role in global trade while pledging to connect countries eager to expand their own economies. President Xi Jinping addressed delegations from over 100 countries, including many heads of state, Wednesday, saying Beijing would further relax tariffs on many imports from developing nations to help boost their economies. The president called his country's economic plan a win-win approach that will encourage trade and investment. Critics of China's development plan say the country's building projects will not adhere to the same safeguards on human rights and environmental protections as projects funded by institutions like the World Bank. The United States frequently puts conditions on foreign development aid that calls on recipients to improve transparency, fight corruption, or make progress on political or social rights. In his speech to the gathering Wednesday, Indonesia's President Joko Widodo said, "It's imperative that we build a new economic order that is more open to emerging economic powers." Indonesia is one of the 57 countries that applied to join China's new development bank known as the Asia Infrastructure and Investment Bank. Japan and the United States have not joined. The co-chair of the conference, Zimbabwe's 91-year-old President Robert Mugabe, called for reform of the United Nations, specifically the elimination of the UN Security Council's veto power, which is dominated by permanent members, the United States, Britain, France, Russia, and China.
One of the essential ingredients in doing so will be the strengthening of our unity in continuing to fight for a United Nations that recognizes all its members as equal partners.
Middle East leaders like Jordan's King Abdullah II called for solidarity in the fight against terrorism and extremist Islamic militant groups. He mentioned how the world rallied in support when Islamic State extremists killed two Japanese hostages and also a Jordanian pilot. Iranian President Hassan Rouhani also condemned in particular the Sunni militants fighting in Iraq and Syria. And he may have been referring to Saudi Arabia and other Sunni groups when he condemned the regional and international players that support these extremists. Saudi Arabia is also leading a military coalition to fight Houthi insurgents in Yemen that are reportedly receiving support from Iran. In his remarks, Japan's Prime Minister Shinzo Abe made brief comments expressing deep remorse for past war. He was referring to criticism, especially from China and South Korea, that he is trying to deny the extent of atrocities committed by the Japanese military during World War II. Most of the other leaders focused on trade between developing countries, more investment in infrastructure like roads, electricity, and ports, and other development issues. The leaders' summit at the Asia-Africa Conference ends Thursday and is expected to produce a new cooperative framework and bilateral trade agreements. Many of the leaders participating in this summit will also join in a procession in Bandung Friday to commemorate the original 1955 Asia-Africa Conference. Brian Patton, VOA News, Jakarta.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. Stay tuned for Straight Talk Africa with Chaka Sali coming up at 18:30 UTC. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at www.voaafrica.com. And on behalf of our Africa News Tonight producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Nelson Lopes, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Take your pick. Watch on television, log on to the internet, or listen right here on the radio. Hello, I am Chaka Sali, the host of Straight Talk Africa from the Voice of America.
Next on Straight Talk Africa, host Chaka Sali goes in-depth with the Sierra Leonean president, Ernest Bai Koroma. That's next, right here on VOA Africa.